I'm Dan Orlovsky. When I'm looking for safety, I always take the extra steps and listen to Chris and Case on the Detroit Lions podcast.
Lions with it, second and goal from the 8, down 6, but on the move. Chris, working from the gun, looks out to the right, now checks out that Viking defense. Takes the snap, back to pass, looks right, got Case in the end zone, touchdown, Detroit Lions! That's it, pack the bag, start the plane. This game is over! How big is that?
And now it's time to start the Detroit Lions podcast.
Lions fans, it's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions podcast, your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, two guys who run a 4-minute 40, Chris and Case.
Hey, Idaho Lions fans, welcome to the Detroit Lions podcast. We're in episode 160. This is the official Detroit Lions podcast for Reddit. I am your dashing host, Chris, and with me is my good friend and co-host, Case. How are you doing, my man?
Good, Chris. I'm in a little bit of a hurry. I hope we get done with the show quick today. I've got a bachelor party I had a plan for this weekend.
Ooh, nice, nice. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it will be. I'm performing. I'm the entertainment.
Okay. Okay, today's show, Fantasy Football's Live. We're going to talk about that again. Get in quick because that's filling up. We're going to talk about the Detroit Lion Podcast Training Camp Party on August 4th that night. Make sure to come and join us. It's going to be a grand time. We're going to talk about the Jim Brandstetter situation, and that's not as fun a time, but we're going to talk about it and what it means and give some thoughts on that. We're also bringing in a really talented guest. We're going to talk about AI in the NFL, WTF. There's that and a whole lot more. We got a great show lined up for you. Case, are you ready to go, my man?
Hang on, Chris. I'm working on this body hair situation. I'm trying to get it all shaved off. Yow!
Let's kick this off and break it down.
All right, time for a couple of quick announcements. First, check us out and help us out on Patreon. Special thanks to Dylan from...
Gume!
That's right. Of course, our first donor, Mathis, and Brian B. from I Prevail. Check them out at iprevailband.com. They're doing some cool stuff with us here shortly, and I think you guys are going to love it. But hey, join the Patreon crew, patreon.com/DetroitLionsPodcast, patreon.com/DetroitLionsPodcast. It's a great way to support the show, and we appreciate all that you folks do. You get some extra stuff every now and then. We put some extra stuff together during the week, but I'm also putting together a little something that's going to land in their mailbox here very shortly. So if you'd like to get part of that, join the crew as well. As little as $1 a month, we'll get you access to that extra content, and you'll hear more about the stuff that goes out when it does go out. But join the crew, help us out. We appreciate you guys so much. It really helps us keep the innovation and everything else rolling. Patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast. Thank you all for joining the crew. All right, next week we will be doing a best of show. I've got 1 week of vacation before training camp and season starts, so I'm going to be off doing that family thing, and we got a little place in the mountains we're going to go retreat to. But don't worry, we're not leaving you alone. We've got a great show. It's going to be it's not going to be super long, but it's full of bloopers and kind of a review of some of the funny stuff that's happened off the air and didn't make the show. So make sure to check it out. It's something to kind of tide you over until we hit this thing full bore as training camp goes. Make sure to give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, and on the Twitter machine at DETLionsPodcast. That's DETLionsPodcast. It's the very best place to see Case
with no pants on.
Wow. And also on high def, 1080p, 60 frames a second, you can see Case with no pants if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Detroit Lions Podcast, youtube.com/Detroit Lions Podcast. We will be broadcasting all our live post-game shows there, so make sure you subscribe so you can see those. And also, we're going to be simulcasting, live streaming our live training camp party and the live show we do there, interactive with the audience via that YouTube channel, so make sure you get notified. So if you can't be there, you can still be there. Make sure to rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you find it. Thank you so much, everybody. We've gotten some pretty funny ratings lately in reviews. Those five stars are much, much appreciated. Helps push us up the charts there and helps people find us. And we love the sense of humor, guys. So if you want to have fun with them, just do the five stars and have a grand old time in the comments section. Again, you can rate us on iTunes, at Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere that you find us. And thank you all for giving us those ratings. Don't forget to give us a call via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast, all one word on Skype, Detroit Lions Podcast, or you can call us on the Lions line, 929-33-LIONS. It's 929-335-4667. Leave us a message. There's two folks that did that this week. You leave us a message, you get a chance to hear yourself on the show.
Tighten your chin straps, kids. It's time to review This Week in Reddit.
All right, it's time to talk about all the fun and exciting things going down this week in Reddit. And the first one isn't fun. I don't know if exciting is even the right word, right, Case?
No. Disappointing.
Yeah. All the not fun and disappointing things going down this week. One of the two calls we talked about in the open there actually is related to this. So why don't we start with the call and let the call lead us into the topic.
Hey, guys, this is Ryan calling from Benton Harbor, hometown of former running back Cook Bell. Anyways, being that Jim Brandstetter is no longer going to be on the radio, I think we need to get a petition going to get WJR to get him back on. I am not happy about this decision, and it's going to significantly affect me watching the games as far as my enjoyment level. So I think we need to get something together and get Jim back on. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, you know, I've been in contact with Jim. He and I have been exchanging some emails here the last couple of weeks. He's been away up north. He did some family reunion stuff, and we've been getting ready to get him on the show. And this really stinks. This really stinks. But I know enough about him and know him well enough to know that he's not the kind of guy that like wants a petition drive or that kind of stuff. Jim Brandstetter is one of those. He's one of those old school cool guys. You know what I mean? He's like, yep, that's the way it is. It sucks and it hurts. I guarantee it hurts. But he's like, this is the world it is, and he's gonna suck it up and grind on and act like a man. He doesn't want that kind of thing. He stands on his old merit. But I mean, he hasn't said that. But that's just my knowledge of Jim. But this is really unfortunate. He's been around since 87. This whole situation, we've been doing these articles on our site for almost 3 years, right? It's the first time I wrote an article because
everyone should go check it out.
Thank you. This one really got to me. I like Jim. Yeah. Jim's been an inspiration for me. He's such a cool guy. He was on episode 7.
Was he not like our very first, like, above our station, you know, get.
Oh yeah. I mean, we could call the Aussie guys, right? They were probably there too, but just because we're, I mean,
that's
so
another
new
podcast. No disrespect to those guys intended whatsoever. I love them.
Yeah, but. No, they're great. But yeah, Jim did because that's the kind of guy he is. He's a real big guy in the community. Does a lot of stuff very quietly. He's such a class act. This is and kind of ahead of the show. You made a great point. He's such a class act that it would have been hard for anybody to do this in a way that matched the level of class that Brandy brings around. But boy, they sure could have done a better job on this.
Yeah, I mean, even though like a public statement of, you know, thank you for your service, we're going to try something else or something like that. Like even if it was just, you know, I don't know. I just... It seemed disrespectful, and maybe it wasn't intended that way, but it certainly did. And all signs point towards this being an opportunity for them to bring in Lomas Brown. I, not being from the Detroit area, and you know, Chris also not living there, I've had to rely on others' opinions that I've read about, you know, what that will mean in terms of the quality of the color commentary. And there's seems to be less than, you know, abundant enthusiasm about the change. Yeah. So I'm always somebody, I'll give him a fair shot. I mean, as you know, but
it would
suck if we took a downgrade in terms of the color commentary and they were less than, you know, respectful in terms of letting go kind of a legend.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's I hope, right? This, and it's always hard with change. Change is difficult to deal with, but it's all so prevalent anymore. It's just the way the world is. But so we've moved on, and I wish the very, very best for Lomas. You know, and frankly, I hope Lomas winds up being even better than Brandy was, right?
I wish him no ill will in terms of, like, I hope it goes well.
Yeah. We've been so lucky. I compared it in the article to our kind of run of kickers from Eddie Murray through Prater and Hansen, right? We've had this long run. It's been the same way. I mean, Brandy's been there since 87. We had Frank Beckman before him who sat across from him or next to him for a couple of years and then moved on to Mark Champion, who was also a great, great broadcaster. And there was a lot of lamentations when he left and Dan Miller came in.
Dan Miller might be the best play-by-play guy in the whole league.
Right now, for sure. Yeah. And he does an amazing job, right? And so it was a lot of the same feelings when Mark Champion left, and Dan's been able to fill those shoes and do a great job. So you kind of hope that you wind up getting the Matt Prater here and not the Nate Freeze with
Lomas. Alex Henry.
Alex Henry. So, you know, best of luck to the crew, but, you know, it hurts. It hurts. I've always liked Jim.
It really hurts.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. So best of luck, Jim. And for those who really love him, you still can pick him up on the Michigan broadcasts. And he's a lot of fun there. But the thing that is the most about Jim is just how much of a class act he is. He is
good guy.
He's really great. So, all right, let's move on to something maybe a little less
depressing.
Yeah, a little less depressing.
I hope. If it is.
They got a post in the Reddit from the 392NX. I think that's like the five times P90X or something like that. It's like the super
guy.
He just signed up for training camp. He's excited for the season. Anyone else going? And heck yeah. So let's talk about it first off from kind of where he's coming from. Absolutely excited. Training camp, don't forget, you can go sign up and get your stuff all in there on the Lions website. And that's important. But let's not forget about the training camp party, the Detroit Lions podcast training camp party. Dude, this is going to be an absolute riot. And I'm not saying, but it happens to be in Brandsetter's backyard. Did you know that? I mean, it's not literally in his backyard, but it could be. I mean, if we put up a volleyball net here, the ball might roll into his backyard.
Where the post party is.
Yeah. So anyway, big party we're having here, and it's at the Uptown Grill in Commerce Township. Okay, and it is a ticketed event. You need to buy a ticket ahead of time because we have limited space. We have some guests coming. We'll put it that way. Case can't make it, unfortunately, and we're all lamenting that. But the Riz will be there, filling in. We'll also have Sandman there doing some talking, and a good friend from Lions Wire, Eric Schlitt. We'll be joining as well. So we're going to be doing a live stream there. It's going to be interactive. There may or may not be pants, but, this will be a decision upon the audience. But it will be interactive. It'll be a good time, and you guys can take part. The tickets, there's dinner involved. How about that? We're class act this year, Case. We got the whole thing going. You got all you can eat, all kinds of pizza, salads, sides, unlimited soft drinks, and all that kind of stuff. And then you automatically get one entry to win door prizes out of that ticket. One of the items to win is a signed football from Billy Sims. Pretty
very nice,
right? And you got Lions merchandise.
To Kate, I love you too on it.
Lions merchandise coming from Fanatics as well. They're stepping up the plate, going to give us some stuff to do giveaways. They've already given us a gift card to give away, a $25 gift card. So just for walking in the door, you could break even. Right, straight up even on your ticket price. Some podcast merchandise. We have some stuff that's for the podcast itself and a whole lot more as we continue putting this together. This is not a fundraising event. This is different than fantasy football. This is a break-even, we hope, event. This is a celebration, a party, a good time, and a time for everyone to get together. ahead of the season and celebrate the Lions and everything else. So please, please be sure to join us. Head to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Up in the main menu, or if you're on your phone, that little hamburger menu, you'll see Training Camp Party. You can go in there. You can get your ticket. We are also selling extra entries to win door prizes. So you could, if you really want that Billy Sims football, you can get those as well. But it does require you to be present to win. So be there or be
body and mind.
Nah, your body's good enough. So good time. And get those tickets ahead of time, because if you don't, there may not be room if it sells out, and they're $5 more if it doesn't when you get there. So there you go. $25 gets you all that great stuff. Head to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on the Training Camp Party link, and it'll get you in. It's going to be an absolutely awesome, awesome time. Otherwise, training camp's just the normal stuff. We'll be doing our reporting there. I will be at training camp on Friday, the 3rd, Saturday, the 4th. There's nothing on Sunday because we got recovery Sunday after the party. No training camp. And then Monday I'll be there as well. Look for me, tweet at me, DM me, however you find me. I will be there and be happy to hang out with you. Sam Mann will be hanging out with us, as well as pretty much all the folks you know. Eric, Riz, all kinds of people. So it'll be a good time. All right, we'll move on to the next topic. This is a pretty interesting topic because we have a team with a new coach. We have what's effectively a completely revamped offense, even though Cooter's still around. But PFF, the Bible, according to Case, I know how much you absolutely base everything you think of about NFL. You go to PFF to know what to think. they've got offensive line rankings. And
are they offensive?
They could be offensive. But we've got the great unknown here, right? After the draft, we really have no idea what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And entering 2018, they have the Lions ranked at 8th. We spent a lot of treasure in the last 2 years in this line, the last two drafts. This was posted by the Lionist, by the way. What do you think? Is 8th, is this right? Is this where we're at? Do they know what they're talking about?
Our offensive line is 5 question marks. I was trying to think of somebody who wasn't a question mark, but I don't think there is one. Decker obviously had the injury, came back. He didn't quite play up to the level he did as a rookie, but he improved, you know, as time went on. So, I mean, I'm not upset with him. If he comes back and plays at the level that we would expect, you know, a player who's been in the league for a couple of years now to play at the position and with the potential that he has, I mean, he could be a top 10 left tackle, no problem. I have no problem with that. Rick Wagner, obviously on the opposite end, struggled at times last year, had injuries at times last year, but you threw him. And I think you can lump him and Lang together because they both had a very similar situation. You know, both struggled with injuries, both were, you know, tossed into a completely new system. Both had, you know, several weeks where they were playing, you know, with somebody unfamiliar next to them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, I'll get into this later, but you know, in a scheme that has been criticized, the coaching of the offensive line has been criticized. But both of those guys were excellent players. There's a reason that Rick Wagner got, that the highest paid, you know, right tackle in the league last year. Doesn't necessarily mean he was the best right tackle in the league, but in free agency, you have to overpay. And there's a reason he got that money though.
We didn't overpay for Golden Tate.
Right, exactly.
So you don't have to overpay.
It's all circumstantial. But what I'm saying is, like, if you've got a guy who's clearly the prize of the position group, and that's a position of weakness, nobody is going to get to underpay for a guy that was in the position that Rick Wagner was in. There was nobody else who was going to get him for less than what we got him for, is my point. Yeah. Anyway.
Fair point.
I think, you know, there's absolute, you know, 100% possibility. I guess 100% possibility means it's certainty. There's a high possibility that he immediately, you know, gets back to form under, you know, a year of familiarity. If he stays healthy with the new offensive line coach, I think, you know, there's huge potential for him to be one of the, you know, a top 10 right tackle. So I buy that. TJ Lang, he's been to the, he didn't deserve this last Pro Bowl necessarily. In terms of
especially after doubling his holding calls year over year,
right? Right, right. Wow, and that's hell, been. And I've talked about that, and you know, but I think a big that's such a like a thing, like because yes,
twice as many calls. He's just cheating. He had
four holding calls.
He lost a step. Yep.
He never had more than two in a season.
You're not gonna let me ruin this, are you? You're just gonna cut this down completely.
What you gonna do?
No, you already ruined it. You already ruined it. It's too late.
All right. No, but I mean, I get the whole concept of him, you know, of the Lions being targeted for that kind of thing more than the Packers, and to some small degree, I think that may have been a factor. But again, like I said, with Rick Wagner, you know, new system, new teammates around him, dealing with injuries, and so the probability of those kind of things goes up too. So like, but another year in this system, he's a little bit older, which, you know, gives you that area of concern, but he's been a very solid guy through his career. There's no reason for me to believe that there isn't a solid chance that he could rebound. So, I mean, you're looking at three guys, all of whom could majorly rebound. I think Glasgow and Ragnow. Is it really Glasgow and Ragnow?
Glasgow and Ragnow.
All right. The Thor twins. I mean, they're the unknowns here. In terms of Glasgow had a decent season last year when he played center. But I think at this point early in his career, yet he is still somewhat of an unknown. And Frank next to him, whichever direction next to him is also an unknown, even though I think the potential is high. So I don't think, I mean, there is absolutely a solid chance that number eight is where the Lions are on the offensive line rankings. They could be higher. There's just a ton of question marks.
Well, I heard Stafford talking about it, and he said, you know, it's really hard to tell. You know, there's new line coach, new head coach, new players that we drafted. You know, we're gonna see what happens, but until then,
so it's all good.
So that's what we're just gonna have to say. We'll go with it.
It's almost weird to see PFF rank the Lions that high in anything. They have a tendency to not like the way we do things. Mm-hmm. and that's getting into my, you know, theories on PFF, but they have preferred methods that I think subconsciously or consciously rank higher than others. And it's rare that we end up on the positive side of that. So it's interesting that they have us ranked so high.
Yeah. No, absolutely. All right. Well, hey, if you want to get on the train before PFF gets them all the way up to number one and surprises, you want to be able to rep that team. Maybe you go out and get your number one jersey. But the way to do it is head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on that that Fanatics link. There's a little picture you can click on, or if you go to that hamburger menu on your phone or the main menu at the top, you see shop. You head over to Fanatics and get all the latest gear. Case, if you look in the background, because we got the camera going here, you see my little Lions home plaque that I got on the wall there. I just picked that up. It has the old latitude and longitude on it. It's a nice little piece for the studio. But anyway, so yeah, you can go over there, get your stuff. It's a great way to go get anything Lions. It's all the official stuff, the high quality stuff, and by doing it through DetroitLionsPodcast.com, they give us a little kickback for sending them your way. And because you guys are so good about that, that's why they're giving us these giveaways for the party. And there's stuff in the line to do during the show. So we may do it during the live post-game shows and whatever else. But keep going. Anytime you get your Lions gear, go through DetroitLionsPodcast.com so we can keep shipping you these great prizes and get these gifts and giveaways going, because you guys deserve it. You have to put up with Case. And God, anyone who doesn't do that deserves free Lions stuff for sure. All right, we'll move on. Let's talk about a report coming in. ESPN steps in and hires Dan Orlovsky. They've definitely crossed, backed over the line on this one. Brought him in as a football analyst, and he's going to be doing college football stuff. That was posted by Funny Penguin 97. It's great to see Dan. You know, he got his start here on the show, And it's just so great to see them grow up and see what they become as they get older and more responsible, isn't it, Case?
Yeah, of course. It's really bizarre to think that a guy who's, you know, it was bizarre to think that a guy who played for the Lions in the first place, played in the NFL, you know, came to talk to us because that's, you know, awesome.
He filled in for you.
He filled in for me for a show. Like, so, I mean, that's awesome. I pat on our, you know, own backs, mostly yours, for getting us to the point where we can get, you know, a player to come on and fill in, you know, as a co-host. but also to think that, you know, and as much as, you know, we like to shit on ESPN, it's still nice to see guys whose opinion you respect go to an organization like that because you hope that they can have some positive impact anyway.
So. It's nice to see him improve, yeah. So I was talking to him tonight. We thought about giving him a call and have him on, and he can't talk about it yet. So stay tuned to the Dan Orlovsky station. A lot going on, really cool stuff. And it's great to see him. It's great to see him successful. He did great. Did you see him at all in the flag football stuff there, Case? He did a really good job, didn't he?
I didn't see that, but I did see that excellent Javid Best catch.
Ooh, that was hot. That was so hot. That was really nice. I mean, I was pretty impressed. All right. So, hey, congrats, Dan. We'll talk to you soon about it as soon as you can open that up and have that happen. He's also considering, he doesn't know if it's going to work. So I'm not promising anything. I don't know what training camp party. We're talking to all our friends. So we'll see how it goes. Also, we did talk about this a little bit, but we want to make sure you know fantasy football is back live again, guys. And remember, this is a fundraiser. So we get a little bit of cut of the cash, but you can win some pretty big cash. First, second, third place in all leagues, the Champions League, the IDP League, the Standard League. And then there's a first place only prize on the Beginners League, but there's four great leagues going. It's not a big buy-in, and it's a great way to support the show and have a lot of fun playing against the likes of me. I'm not sure if Case is going to come in this year. He's really been just dragging ass on his participation on the show. Haven't you, Case?
Life is life. And
I don't want to hear about life. I want to hear about the show. That's what it's about. Show first, life later.
I can't say that I don't 100%, you know, count me out yet, because there's a possibility, depending on what's open in which leagues, that I could make an appearance. But you know,
you can play against me, folks.
I'll keep that as vague as possible right now. So
yeah, I was one step out of the money in the Champions League last year, which is twice now that this has happened. I made it to the fifth playoffs and I choked in the first game, but it will not happen three times in a row. I will steal the money from you poor suckers in the Champions League. I promise you.
You say so.
So there's good stuff. Go on in. You can check it out. DetroitLionsPodcast.com/fantasy. And you can see it. And there's four great icons there. There's one with a monkey doing something to a football. Beginners League, you draft a backup kicker. It's for reals. Anyway, and then...
Saw the face I made. That was the...
Yeah.
You click so on something a monkey is doing to a football. All right.
Click fine. On the little icon, and it gives you the description and the prizes available and all that. And it's a pretty good deal. It's a lot of fun. We'll talk about it this year as we go on through the weeks and see how the players are doing. And I think maybe we'll get some of the winners on the show. And also, we just might have another Billy Sims autograph football to give away as a bonus prize for the people that play. One that you don't have to win. It's a it's kind of like a door prize. Come in and some lucky person who plays will win that. So working on all that. Get in there. Get in and play. We're just waiting for that stock to come in before we can promise 100%. But it's been promised by our guy Billy. So let's rock that one out. So get in. Fantasy football. DetroitLionsPodcast.com/fantasy. Come and have a grand old time. All right. Here's another one. There's another list. Are you ready for this? We are told that according to ESPN... who I think you respect. Now, on the respect list, let's just start here. Is ESPN higher or PFF higher on the Case, like, I respect them list? And this is, we'll say it's pre-Orlovsky.
Here's the thing. Everybody recognizes that ESPN is kind of shit. So, like, that's fine. The issue with PFF is not that they are shit. It's that some people treat them as more than they are. That's the issue. Mm-hmm. I respect what they do.
Wouldn't you say that's true for PFF?
I think they provide a valuable service.
Wouldn't you say that's true for PFF?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying about PFF. I think PFF provides valuable service. I just think a lot of people take it
too far.
seriously than they should. Whereas ESPN, everybody kind of knows, well, that's shit. So,
but you haven't, who's again, pre-orlo- which one, where, who would you, if you had to take one as your gospel?
Oh, I mean, if I literally had to like, place Vegas bets based on, you know, a list of things from either source, I would take PFF.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Okay. So moving down the playing around on the camera really shouldn't be doing this to me.
I didn't want to. Yeah, you made the top of PFF. I didn't really want to.
All right. So let's talk about it. We've got
It's a low bar.
We've got the corporation, the network, ESPN, that Case is betting his life on. I always take it and make it the opposite, don't I? Okay, so ESPN comes in. This was posted by OnePride9 and says this, and boy, this tells you how good they are. The Lions have the 21st best offensive arsenal, according to ESPN. And this is something I think we could talk a little bit about, Case, because frankly, I'll just, it's bullshit. It's one word.
It's bullshit.
It is absolutely.
We're the bullshit.
There you go.
Thank you for reminding me of that, guy.
Yeah. yeah. It's yeah, and it's clearly a, you know, lack of, well, and everybody wants, you know, everybody, obviously Lions fans, we want to, no respect. You
nobody
know,
like, wants to be 21. That's
kind of thing. Obviously. And there is a weakness at tight end position, and we talk about that a little bit. There is a lot of question mark at the running back position, but if and you have to understand this 21st best offensive arsenal is not taking into account offensive line or quarterback. So that's where they go. But I mean, to have a top five wide receiver group and be that low, I think that's
five, huh? Are you going beyond just one and two, right?
I would be amazed if anybody could come up with five teams with a better wide receiver group. Galladay being, you know,
that's actually what I'm saying. I said top five. So I said you're going beyond just the one and two, because I think our duo of Tate and Jones, I don't go this far typically, but I would say that they're definitely vying for number one as a pair.
Oh, they are an option for number one. I won't argue with that. And then the strength of having Galladay and TJ Jones, who, you know, I'm not saying that TJ Jones is, you know, the best wide receiver in the league or anything, like, but as a number four wide receiver, yeah, that's pretty damn good. Yeah, like, damn straight. there just aren't teams that have, you know, that kind of depth at the position. And so that's why I think that is the reason that I feel like 21st is, you know, a slight...
Talk about the tight end position, though, because you brought that up that might be a reason. I'm going to say, so Ebron turned it on at the end of the year, right? But if I look at his body of work, I obviously have not been a fan. You've heard it. You know I'm not a big fan throughout the course of his career. Yep. He couldn't block, right? And he didn't really seem to get better at blocking. We got some decent blocking people. Definitely an upgrade for tight end blocking now, right? Okay, so I think we're better there.
I think Fells wasn't actually that terrible. I think part of what was struggling about Fells was the same thing that was struggling about Lang and Wagner, mm-hmm. So for whatever that's worth.
So then you get to Ebron, and look, we have a very short period of time where he was really catching the ball. Before that, it seemed to be a bit of an issue, right? Yes, he was quick, but he fell down at first contact every freaking time, except just
until, of course, you know, the second half of this.
And
last
even then, it happened. There was, like,
you know, trying to make money and
four or five real memorable times that I have, though, where he didn't fall after first contact. Oh, yeah. Even when he was doing totally. Really well.
Oh, you know, that was my one. That was even a bigger criticism for me than the drop passes was, you know, that he fell over with a feather. So
yeah, absolutely. So here's the thing. So effectively, you've got a guy who could get open, was a marginal catcher of the ball, right? And then immediately went down. Well, here's a couple of guys you have that Stafford will get them the ball if they're open, right? They're not probably going to make any wild moves or any giant runs after the catch, but they're probably going to catch the ball. One of them.
Wilson has a very comparable drop rate.
Yeah.
So just... You know,
and he's going to deal with the Stafford whistling missile. So we'll see how that happens. But right. So that's really where the difference is, though, right? I mean, look, Ebron, I think sometimes is because of his athleticism and that potential and that little flash we saw him. I think we overweight his ability a little bit too much, that more than we should. And I think maybe we're underweighting what we have in tight ends. So I don't think we're better. I don't think we're the same, but I don't think the drop off is as crazy as the general consensus is right now. That's just kind of where I'm at.
And I guess I'm sitting on the opposite end of the fence, that I think that anybody who thinks right now that we're not going to be a weak team at that position is I recognize, and believe me, anybody who's listening to this knows that I have every criticism of Ebron in my back pocket. Like I get that. I really do.
I wear it on my shirt sleeve.
But, Luke Wilson is not the athlete that Eric Ebron is.
I'm told he's a gorgeous man, though.
Oh, and here's the thing. I'm despite the fact that I think we took a relatively large step back in terms of talent at the position, and the only way that that's going to be rectified is if Roberts takes an unexpected leap forward, and I'm not putting that out of the realm of possibility, because you know you got a young tight end. I'm always willing to believe that young tight ends can still, you know, improve. Because it takes, you know, some time. So, like, I mean, he's only a second year guy. I think there's a lot of people writing him off, and I'm not doing that. I'm also not assuming he's going to be great, but I'm not assuming he's, you know, a lost cause either.
If I were to rate, I would just say he's not going to affect positive or negative. I just wouldn't weight him either way. I just say he's
going to be great. I don't know. I mean, the guy has the tools to the physical tools. Mm-hmm. So it's all about whether or not he progresses in the game. But the thing with Ebron is, like, he was probably over the last 2 years. And I once upon a time, I dug up all the statistics on this. And so I'd have to go really down a far rabbit hole, and I'm not willing to do that, like, on short notice here.
Sure thing,
but Ebron was maybe our most valuable player in third and long situations over the last couple of years. Not because he did great things after the catch, but because he was very good at getting separation. He was good at route running, and he was good at using his athleticism to get separation. Of course, he dropped some of those. We get it. We really do.
Yeah.
But I feel like that is what we don't have at that position anymore, is somebody who can bail us out in a third and long situation. And now you hope that you can make up for some of that with, hopefully the emergence of a second excellent outside wide receiver and keep Tate, you know, slot full time. That kind of thing will, you know, hopefully balance itself out. But I wouldn't be surprised to see our third and long. The other part of that is that you hope that our third and long numbers, the number of times we actually have to throw from third and long, go down with an improved run game. But you know, that's a whole other issue.
Well, and here's the thing. I think we're exchanging a good run game for a decent tight end group.
And I'll buy that.
And
I will buy that.
I think, you know, the Joe Lombardi and then the handoff to Cooter, which I think there's a lot of mucking around with from Caldwell there, was trying to lean on a very kind of Saints-y, tight end heavy type of a game. And I don't think that's what this offense is going to be about anymore. So again, I look at it and I don't think that the drop off we're going to see, we may see lower tight end numbers. I don't deny that, but we're going to have better blocking at tight end, and we're going to use those tight ends to be blocking more. I think just the way we use the position will be different. And I think for the offense overall, we're probably going to see a little bit of an upgrade. That's just my thinking. And it's not strictly because of the tight ends. It's the scheme,
right?
It's the running game, it's the line, and so on. But how we use them is going to change. And I think it's going to help us.
I do not have a problem with the thought that overall the offense has a good chance to improve. I'm not necessarily going to assume that it will, but if the run game can significantly improve, it takes the need for what Ebron brought to the table down.
Yep.
But if you want to talk strictly about the tight end position, you know, I've heard a lot of people say things like, addition by subtraction. I didn't like Ebron. He was an incredibly frustrating player to watch, and his attitude was bad. So I get all that. He wasn't worth the draft pick. So, I mean, there's that whole history, and I get all that. I really do. But if you're trying to say that Luke Wilson is as good a receiver, or, you know, he's not that much a better blocker, he's definitely not a better receiver. So if Luke Wilson is our tight end number one, and if they were to try to use him in a similar way, it would be disappointing.
Oh,
and
absolutely. That would be a train wreck. I mean, we'd have to have crashing investigations all over the place. What's going on in this thing?
The production, the overall yards, the overall catches, maybe the overall touchdowns, even though Ebron wasn't necessarily a red zone, juggernaut because of his, lack of physicality, will almost certainly go down this year without that there. So that's my thought. I'm okay with the trade-offs they made because I think, they're calculated losses.
Yeah.
It's not like they just lost and didn't try to.
It's a part of a broader plan, right? The difference at tight end is not going to be a net difference to the offense. That's that. It's a sum of multiple parts.
That is with the caveat if the run game improves. If the run game doesn't improve and we end up in third and long all the time again, I think we are in real trouble.
If the run game doesn't improve, we're going to be giving away toasters to everybody and taking a bath at the same time because there's just no excuse. There's absolutely no excuse for that not to happen. I'm confident enough that I'm almost absolute. I am confident and barring injury, of course, injury changes the equation completely. But if the guys we have now are all there to play, I'm confident we'll do well. Maybe not number one, maybe not number two, but we'll definitely do well. And that's that. So anyway, that's where the Cro-Mag Network ESPN has us 21st best in the offensive arsenal range. And I think that's stupid. And I think they're stupid and they should be sad. But to go along with the tight end talk, we got some serious shade going around on Twitter. Darius Slay lays it out. I mean, thanks for being my spirit animal here, Darius. I'd just like to inform Ebron85 that we are no longer friends. This is reported by Gerfic. And I feel the same way. I think I'm going to go ahead and just a retweet isn't enough. I think I'm going to go ahead and just tweet the same. And maybe we should just all let Ebron know that we are no longer friends. Does that feel good?
Yeah. It's actually I really love Slay. But would I call Slay the most mature dude ever?
He's probably talking about PUBG or something, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. That's exactly what I'm getting at.
It's probably Fortnite versus PUBG challenge thing, right?
Them playing around. Obviously, he probably shouldn't say things like that on Twitter just because obviously, people are going to run with it.
No, I think it's fine. I think it's absolutely fine. It was funny stuff. So, yeah, that's where they're at. Speaking of PUBG, we're doing the Play with the Podcast. This week we recorded on Thursday, so we can't do it. But I've been on all kinds of time playing with a couple of folks. We did some PUBG. We did some Fortnite. Case, you got to check out the Fortnite, man. You really do. I know you're not a COD guy, but it's free. It's a free download.
I really do prefer my single player RPG.
I know things. You do. I'm telling you, I was surprised. I told you, I'm a big Call of Duty guy. I found the original disc for the very first Call of Duty rolling around here.
Give me some. Do you guys want to get on and play Civilization? Because I'll do that.
Yeah, do that. You should. I'm telling you, this is different. I did not think I was going to like it, but I'm like, hey, I'm playing with a podcast, so go check it out. And it was a lot of fun. It was way more fun than I thought. And it's not COD at all. It's not first person shooter stuff. It's
if you wanted to roll back time to 2004 and play some online Halo, I'd take you to school, but
I don't think
it was a long time ago.
Buddy, look at me. Yeah, if I can do this, you can do this. All right. Come on now. So anyway, Play with a Podcast. Look for DET Lions Podcast. That is just like the Twitter. It's our gamer tag on the Xbox. You can join us. You can play. It's a lot of fun. And we, Case, everybody's asking. You should just come try it. Just come try it one night.
You guys want to play GoldenEye?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'll give you the... Never mind. Golden eyes are fine eyes. So there we go. We'll move on from that. hey,
Golden pistol.
You're out there shopping. You're getting your video games.
Proximity mines.
You're getting your proximity mines. You're getting your brand new controllers. You're getting whatever you're getting. You're going to Amazon.com because that's the best place to get it, right? I mean, they've got everything. They've got great pricing and they've got quick delivery to your door. It's amazing. But, you know, when you're doing that Amazon thing, there's a way you can help out the podcast. And we appreciate all you folks that are doing that. You head over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com, click on that Amazon link. It's on the main menu. There's also a link on the, a little graphic link on the side you can use. And it takes you right there. It doesn't give you any of those flippity-dippity-do pop-ups or any of that kind of stuff. It just takes you right to the site, but it sets a cookie to let them know that, hey, Chris and Case sent you over here, and they give us a little kickback. Doesn't cost you more. Doesn't cost you anything except a little extra one click. But it helps out the podcast. We appreciate, like I said, all the folks that are doing that. You guys are the ones that help keep us going by doing that, and the Patreon, and the SeatGeek is another one if you're going to buy your tickets. And that's where I'm getting my tickets for Thanksgiving. That's where I'm getting my tickets for Game 3 of the preseason, the whole thing. It's a great, great service. But head on over to Detroit Lions Podcast for Amazon, for SeatGeek, for your Lions gear at Fanatics, any of those things. We appreciate you doing that and helping us out and helping us be able to fund the innovation and great new stuff that we're doing. With that, we're going to talk a little bit more about innovation. We got a guest, and we're not playing around, right? We don't play around with our guests, do we, Case?
Negative.
I mean, okay, I'm not even going to go into it. When we get guests, we get good ones.
Maybe you do. I over here. When we get guests, in isolation, I don't know what happens in the booth.
When we get guests, we get good ones. And we've got one now, straight from Pitt, University of Pittsburgh. This guy is an absolute expert in the field. Let's talk about artificial intelligence, how it's looking to affect the NFL, and what's going on here. Because this is an amazing and deep topic.
Time for a different kind of breakdown with today's special guest.
All right, and what a special guest we have today. This is something definitely very new for our show, and folks, it's time to get highbrow, okay? We have Kostas Pelikrinis on the phone right now. He is an associate professor in the School of Computing and Information at Pitt. Okay, University of Pittsburgh. We're not playing around. We told you that. But we get our guests. We get the good stuff. Kostas is a guy who knows AI. He knows machine learning. He knows a lot and has just a huge, lengthy resume here from UC Riverside, all kinds of UC Riverside stuff, working at Pitt now, a lot of research, network science, urban informatics, sports analytics. Kostas, you have an incredible resume on something that you've taken something that many people could find a little bit boring or off-putting and applied it to something that a lot of people find fascinating. This is one heck of a way to go. Welcome to the show, by the way.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. So I think first, let's talk about, I think maybe set the stage for folks in how you think about the use of AI and machine learning in sports. You had an article on your blog talking about skill curves in the NFL and unlocking the interactions between passing and rushing. Give us kind of a high-level view of what your research here was and what you saw and what you found.
Yeah, definitely. So what I did in this specific work was basically to look what is the importance of passing game. I went to see what's the importance of the passing game in today's NFL, which we all know that it's pretty much a pass league first, right? And all this analytics movement that has started slowly taking off in the NFL as well, it has reached a consensus that passing is more efficient, which is true. So when you pass, you can have big plays, gain more yards on average. It's much more efficient. And there is this notion of expected points in the analytics community, which tells you that you gain more expected points every passing play as compared to a rushing play. So just to give you a brief idea on what is expected points, you can imagine that when you score a touchdown, it's not just the last play that matters. That you don't automatically got these 6 points because of the last pass that might have been a two-yard pass.
Right.
So expected points, what it does is that it's a way that essentially assigns credits to all the plays within the drive, how much they contributed, let's say, to this score. So what I try to see is, okay, we know that passing is more efficient. We know that NFL is now a pass league, a pass first league. But does this mean really that passing is not important? So what I try to do basically is see how passing performs based on how often it's utilized in the game, right? So if you call your offensive plays, 30% of them are passing plays. What is the average expected points that you get from them? Now, if you increase that and you have 50% passing plays, what happens? And so on. So you expect, even from a simple game theory logic kind of thinking, if you pass on every play, you're not going to do very well because the defense knows what you're going to do.
And we've seen that with the Detroit Lions for sure. We've seen that play out.
So the idea is that there, even though rushing is obviously less efficient, there must be a value in it. So basically, that's what I did. And what I did is that I estimated basically what is the efficiency of passing as a function of how many times you pass during the game. And it was clear that the more you pass, the less efficient passing becomes. Now, most of the times, it's still more efficient than rushing, but this efficiency drops. So that's the key point, that the efficiency drops. And this is not something new in terms of idea. It's new, certainly, in NFL. But, for example, my inspiration was some work that has been done in basketball analytics many, many years back, about 15 years back, where basically people examine what is the efficiency of a player as a function of his utilization. So the more shots a player takes, the less efficient he will be. Essentially, this is what they found. So I basically thought, you know, that might be the case also in NFL, and indeed that was the case. Obviously, we don't have enough data to do this separately for every player. You know, it's different having, let's say, Roethlisberger making a lot of passing, and different having,
Matthew Stafford.
I wanted to find someone that was not that good, and I didn't want to say names, but Matthew is definitely good. there is some interaction also with how good your quarterback obviously is. And I don't want to get into the technical details, but we have accounted for that, and still the same trend appears. So this seems to be a trend that, you know, even when you account for things like quality of defense, quality of quarterback, quality of wide receivers, this pattern persists. The more you utilize passing, the less efficient it becomes.
So much of this is and I've talked on the podcast before. I don't know at all if you're familiar with the book Scorecasting.
Yeah,
I've talked about it. Absolutely. I've talked about it on the show before, and it was big influence for me. You're taking it to taking basically where I feel like some of the groundwork was laid there and taking it beyond that. And at this point, a lot of it's going over my head. So, we're going to have to play catch up, as this trend continues, as far as, lay fan, type circumstance is concerned, learning what all these things mean and how teams are using them. But if we're looking at it in terms of sports in general and not just the NFL,
it's interesting case when you bring that up, because we joked a little about the Lions, and you can tell how smart Costas is because he knows that Matthews is a great quarterback, right? I mean, I told you we bring good stuff here, but but when you think about the Lions,
I think everyone knows that.
Thank you. Oh, you'd be surprised. There's people in Detroit, but we'll let them go. We have a team here who has, we've known the running game has just been absolutely horrible, and yet they stuck with it. And we say so often, just put it in Stafford's hands. And as good as he is, the research tells us that you still, even though you know you have a running game that is beyond subpar, right, that is absolutely horrific to even watch, you still need to make those attempts at running the ball in order to open the passing game up and make the passing game as efficient as possible. And Costas, you said that's different. Or it holds true across players. Is there kind of like a magic number or a magic mix that you could kind of pinpoint where passing becomes the most efficient?
So passing is, even when the efficiency of passing drops, it's still more efficient than the rushing efficiency. But what teams are interested in is maximizing the average efficiency, both rushing and passing. So we have done shown some optimization problems, and this fraction that you're asking really depends on how good your rushing game is and your passing game. So, for example, I'll give you some specific numbers. So, let's say if you are very good at passing, this can be as high as 63% to 70%. With for an average rushing team. Mm-hmm. Now, if your rushing is bad, then most probably you need to pass a little more. Now, if you have a bad passing game, let's say last year's Browns, you might want to pass only 30% of the time. So it really depends on how good is your passing and rushing game. But there is a way, based on these numbers, that you can get what is this fraction.
Excellent. So then a team can calculate almost based upon their ability what their mix should be. And it's interesting because with only 16 games in a year, when at one point is a team going to get enough data as to how their rushing mm-hmm. game stacks versus their passing game and what the right mix should be in the game? It's always chasing the next piece, right?
Exactly, and that's a very big problem, I think, in general when someone deals with NFL and analytics, is that the sample size is so small that maybe you have enough data to make some robust arguments after the half of the season is over.
That hindsight.
Now, if your team doesn't change much from year to year, from season to season, maybe you can use some of your older data as well. But you know that's not usually the case, so it might be hard to do that.
That was a good fleshing out of some topics there. But what I want to know is how the use of AI is in assessment of talent in the NFL compared to maybe all other sports. How efficient is this potential now? And in terms of judging talent, in terms of draft prospects, it seems like other sports already are ahead of where the NFL is now in terms of like the NBA. For example, seems to be well ahead of the NFL in terms of efficiency, in terms of figuring out how good a draft pick actually is going to be, and whether or not this will help the NFL come up to the curve on that.
Yeah, I think what you say is right. I mean, NBA is much ahead of the curve in terms of drafting more efficiently. Actually, in fact, there were some studies in the past that showed that in NBA teams, they overestimate talent much less than in NFL. So in NFL, teams actually are still pretty bad at drafting. And I think one of the reasons is that drafting in NFL is much more complicated. There are skill positions, there are several different positions that you need to consider, many more players. It's a completely different game. Teams definitely are using data, and most probably when a new sport breaks into analytics, the very first application is draft and personnel decision. So I think that definitely I would say that most NFL teams, the ones that I know, and I'm hoping that all of them are using some sort of analytics when it comes to drafting players. Now, of course, you will see people doing things that definitely are not recommended by analytics people, like, for example, drafting a running back number one. So that kind of contradicts with what I said earlier, but not really, because I didn't say that you know, running back is the most important position. I just said that it is important, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not that important to draft number one.
Right.
But anyway,
even like drafting a tight end number 10 overall, that would be a dumb move. So, sorry, that's a direct reference to the Detroit Lions' bad draft.
That wasn't fair.
So teams definitely use that. There is a problem there, and the thing is we don't have too good of data for college at the similar level that we have for NFL today. So we have the typical play-by-play and statistics and all these kind of things, but we certainly don't have all the data that we have for pro football. And the other problem is the huge variation in competition. Mm-hmm. Right? So you might have a player in a small school, and because of the competition was bad, nobody paid attention to him, right? And we have seen this repeatedly. I mean, Brady was drafted sixth round, Antonio Brown was drafted in the sixth round. So all of this, there is a lot of variability for many different reasons that do not exist that much in basketball or other sports. And again, to make a comparison between basketball and NFL, obviously basketball only has five players on the court. Mm-hmm. So even drafting one very good player can change your game. Yeah. And your franchise, so whereas it's a little more complicated. As long as we don't talk about quarterback, of course, the other players might have less direct impact on the team.
You know, it's interesting. So what we're kind of saying is because of the number of variables, trying to control for all those variables becomes extremely difficult. And at least as of right now, the way we see things, those smaller school talents are just going to be relegated in the majority of cases. Obviously, there's never an always or an ever, but the small school talents are going to be relegated to later round draft picks just because there's not you can't identify their level of skill because the talent they played with isn't the same as the majority of the folks that you're drafting in those high rounds.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's certainly one of the reasons.
That would be that's one of those, the, you know, if a GM or a team could get the kind of data analysis or an ability to analyze that information in a way where they could find those smaller school picks and elevate them to and understand how they'll perform against that better talent. Boy, that's one of those game changing kind of abilities. If when they get to that level, that's going to make the draft a very, very interesting affair.
Yeah. Okay, so we're talking about player talent here, and that's probably the number one, you know, thing from fans' perspective on how this can affect things. Is there any way that any of this AI stuff can get brought into efficiency? Officiating, as in the referees. And their tendencies and game planning in that regard.
Definitely, I think I'm pretty sure that teams might be doing it. But for example, if I was working with a team, the first thing I would be looking in that area would be calls for pass interference. These are so subjective; they are not reviewable. And I'm pretty sure that there are referees that are more lenient than others when it comes to pass interference. So this can help both the offense planning and the defense planning. Because if you know, for example, that a referee allows some contact, you can possibly have your defensive back playing more aggressively.
You know, you're not playing against the Packers that week.
Yeah. Or your quarterback, if he knows that he most probably can draw a pass interference call, he can push the ball down the field. So I think that definitely, especially when it comes to subjective calls that are not reviewable, this could definitely help in planning. Now, the problem, obviously, is, again, the sample size, right? It can be the case that you have an officiating crew that during the first games it has given five pass interference calls, but it gave it against aggressive defenses, which so you don't really know, was it really pass interference or just the officiator is more strict. Of course, you can see what the video, and that's why and annotate the data further. So this is a very strict pass interference, or you can say that this is a lenient pass interference. So basically, that's where the human should still be in the loop, because you might have to annotate data further in order to basically get a better understanding of what's going on.
That's interesting. That's kind of, you know, the thinking that kind of drove out of that scorecasting book that we've, I mean, look, obviously we're not as sophisticated in this area as you are, Casas, but that's one of the things that we've looked at is with officiating tendencies and how to game plan and think about how things affect those officials, whether it's home or away, but being able to take those larger data sets and find those insights using the computational power of machines is really what I think can take things to the next level. And it's interesting to hear that you think that teams are using that to kind of help generate some of their game plans. And that may be one of the things that explains some of the drastic changes you see in the way teams play from one week to the next. You know, there's always one game year that it seems like they game plan something completely different than they've done the rest of the year. And maybe they're using some of those analytics and understanding some things like the officiating crew and other things to make those kind of changes.
Yeah, it definitely could be. And since you mentioned scorecasting and we're talking about referees, just a very interesting story from the NBA. I don't know if you have read the book Athletics, but there is a very interesting analysis there about Tom Donaghy, the referee of the NBA, that he was accused of fixing games for betting. So basically, what he was accused of was that he was fixing games and pushing them to be over the total points, the total points line. And what they did is that they actually analyzed how many fouls he was giving based on the games that he was suspected to have fixed compared to games that they didn't suspect him of being fixed and compared to other referees and their tendencies. And there was evidence that indeed he had fixed these games. He participated in at least in this. So it can be useful in many ways.
So let's talk about that a little bit. You know, the use of technology, there's always, right, so many sci-fi movies are about the use of technology for bad things and as well as good things. Let's think about it in the context of gambling. What happens if gambling Vegas types or some of the different places that run the gambling operations kind of get ahead of the NFL on some of the analytics here and some of the predictive analytics on the game? How can you see it helping or hurting the game? And what are the broader implications? Could they keep it secret long enough to that the NFL wouldn't get their hands on it? Because I mean, the NFL is big money, right? I mean, from the team side and from the Vegas side, it's an interesting kind of thought exercise to see what happens if the gamblers get ahead.
I think the objective of the gamblers and NFL teams are orthogonal. I don't think they conflict because from the Vegas and the bookmakers that will appear after the Supreme Court decision are interested in making predictions for the game. They are interested in knowing who is the favorite, how much of a favorite this team is, and so on. They are not a team, even if it had, you know, a win probability model, it has a very limited use for it. So, for example, if I'm preparing for the next game, the fact that I know that I have a 60% probability or a 65% probability of winning doesn't really make any difference in my game planning. So I think that their initial, at least, objectives, their top objectives, the gambling industry and NFL or any other sports league for that matter, I think their objectives in the use of analytics are kind of different. Obviously, one of the things that people are worried is, you know, whether there will be collusions and teams try to pitch games and all this kind of stuff, which I doubt it will happen. I mean, it happens in other parts of the world, but I don't think it can happen in the U.S. Well, it can happen, but I think it's a highly unlikely event, and it's not really a problem with analytics. So I really don't see gambling and the NFL or any other league having a class with regards to analytics. Obviously, Vegas has been doing extremely well in predicting games. Otherwise, they would be out of job. I don't think that, you know, even if they improve how good they can predict the games, I don't think that this will impact that much the NFL and the teams.
Given it, because I don't even think I can like ask for any more information on the topic, I'm going to change it and ask about another thing that's extremely important for NFL fans and in the NFL in general and sports in general worldwide. Is there any way for this to have an impact on the safety of the game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think definitely that's one of the areas that AI and machine learning can definitely help. Now, I don't believe that we will reach that point where we can predict injuries. I think many of the injuries are also random. So you can never predict, for example, that a player will step on another player's foot and be out for 2 months. But what you could do is identify trends and identify possibly, whether players are at a higher risk of, for example, getting a concussion, or if they are at a high risk of getting any kind of injury. Now, obviously, this cannot only be done through machine learning and AI. You also need the expertise of doctors, the medical expertise. So I really think that the next frontier in sports analytics is working together with medical and training staff, understanding the risks, the biological and medical risks and knowledge behind these risks, and trying to basically find patterns that you can get early warnings about that. I think that definitely this is the future. In NFL, for example, there are tech companies that try to build helmets that measure various things when it comes to collisions between players. And definitely this data can be very helpful in understanding better the risks that athletes have and how you can reduce these risks.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of what we hope to see. I mean, the idea of gambling is great, but you know, this is the football is a game that Case and I are just madly in love with it, and there's millions of people just like us, and the safety implications in the game, and the fear of where things like CTE would take the game, and what it can take away from some of the fun watching and playing the game, really kind of gives pause. And to be able to utilize some of the tools out there to positively affect the safety of the players would be just ideal, absolutely ideal. So let's think about this a little bit, and I think there's two ways we kind of want to look at it. I think the first piece is knowing what you know in the field and where things are today. What do you think we're going to see in the next 2 to 3, maybe 4 years, in kind of how teams and the NFL itself use machine learning and artificial intelligence to further their knowledge and improve the game?
I think the immediate next step for NFL is to harness the player tracking data, which they have been collecting for the past 2 years. And this offseason, the NFL released all the data to the teams. So before this offseason, basically, every team was still getting data, but they were only getting player tracking data for their own games and only for their own players. So what these player tracking data are, they are basically every move that every player on the field has done. So basically, you can replay the game if you have this data, essentially, as in a video.
Right.
So where this is important, it's important because basically now you can start looking for patterns that cannot be captured by things like how many yards were gained, right? So for example, you might know that a wide receiver gained 15 yards, but why did he gain those 50 yards? Was it something that he did or someone else actually drew a double cover and then he was free? So you can definitely have people do that. The scouting team, scouting people and other personnel that does video film study, but there's only 24 hours in a day.
Right.
So if you have all this data, you can do it extremely fast and extremely efficient, and you can keep looking for patterns that you might not be able to see even with a video, right? So basically what I see is that we will start understanding better how players move, how players play and move off the ball. Because football, American football, together with soccer, to me, I like to describe it as a game of space.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, only the quarterback has the ball in every play, and there's one pass basically that can happen, either a handoff or a pass basically. So this involves two players. What are the rest nine players doing? And this player tracking data can definitely give you that. It can definitely show you and help you identify even potentially better routes, even potentially better coverage, better
right.
schemes. So I think that the immediate next step for NFL analytics, harnessing this player tracking data and trying to understand better what happens away from the ball.
Right.
This has started happening in soccer to a much lesser extent than in NFL, but it happened actually in basketball. So we had heard for many years, this idea of stretching the field, stretching the court, by having players that are able to shoot 3-point shots, but it was only until the NBA put the optical tracking that we were able to quantify that and see that indeed this helps. So I think that this is what we're going to see the next 2 to 3 years. Some teams might be faster than others in understanding that, and definitely there are. Let's say 2 years in the NFL when it comes to analytics, but I think within 3 years, pretty much all teams will be trying to harness this kind of data.
Yeah, and that's kind of the secret behind AI and machine learning, is that whole lake of data that you have to have in order to do the analysis. And
yeah.
I'm thinking it's still pretty young in the NFL, how they're gathering the data and the fact that they have been gathering data. And if I'm remembering, and this is a pure guess, but it's from feel, it's only been like 5 years that they've been putting sensors in the players' shoulder pads and so on and tracking them. So,
I believe it's even less. I believe it's just 2 years. So I think that this will be the third year.
Okay. Okay.
Sure.
And so you have such a small set of data with only 16 games a year plus some playoffs, that to get enough to really start getting a good analysis takes more time. And it feels like you're kind of behind compared to something like baseball. They have had every statistic for every play, for everything that's happened forever. And even I think there's a difference with basketball, because aren't they using like optical sensors to track players to gather data in a way that you don't even need, you can go back and gather data from previous games by running film and have it done on at a machine level rather than having a human do it, right?
No. So you cannot really go back. So there are people that are trying to do that through broadcast video, basically try to get this tracking data, but it's it's still a hard problem even for computer vision machine learning. Mm-hmm. But you're right in the sense that they are using optical tracking, which basically it just requires, well, I'm saying just, but compared to having sensors, it requires basically six cameras on the rafters of the stadium, and basically these cameras track, you know, the positions of the players and the ball 25 times every second. So it's kind of, it's a different technology. The type of data is pretty much the same. Now, which is more accurate? I'm not sure. Definitely, optical tracking can be messy sometimes, especially if you have. I remember I was looking at some of this data, and there was a scramble that was happening with players, and it was recorded as players having exchanged 50 passes or something. So it's still kind of the optical tracking will give you some of that. And I expect that, you know, sensors might also have some of these issues, but the type of data that you get at the end of the day is very similar.
Now let's take a little look a little further out, right? I'm going to ask you to be a little bit of a futurist, get your magic predictor hat on and say, you know, 5, 8, 10 years out, what is the realm of possibility in what we might see in the use of data analytics, AI, machine learning, and how it may be applied to the game of football?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I'm good at predicting games, but not good at predicting what happens in years.
yeah, I saw you did a lot of World Cup prediction this year, and you didn't do too bad.
but I think that, of course, it depends on what the league allows as well. But let's say that this is not a problem for now. I could definitely see, you know, having helmets that have been actually tested and are very good at sensing things like impact of collision, maybe even small cameras that look at the player's eyes and the pupils and how they dilate, and all this information is being sent in real time, you know, the coaches or the training staff, and they can estimate, they get estimates of risk of injury, possible signs of concussion, all these kind of things in real time, which can definitely improve, as we said, safety, but also your chance of winning, right? If you know that the player is very fatigued, you might want to have someone else in his place. Sure. So I think that all this kind of data that we're talking about and that they're being currently collected and analyzed sort of offline and not in real time, mm-hmm. I think that it will be possible to take them in real time, transmit them to the coaching and training staff in real time, and basically even get insights in real time, analyze them real time, and get some insights that will help you make decisions. So that might not sound that futuristic, but I think that in 10 years, if the league allows it, because, for example, in the NBA until now, teams, for example, even though these data were kind of real time, they were not allowed to have them real time. So if the NFL allows that, I can certainly see a scenario in a decade where this can happen.
Well, Casas, thank you so much for your insight. It's great to have you on the show. There's so much going on in this area, and it has an opportunity to really not only just have a direct effect on the game, but revolutionize how teams approach the game. And we're heard and seen a little bit, but it feels a little like the NFL's behind where the rest of the sports are, for all the reasons you said, right? The number of players and the complexity of assessing skill, but you know it's a problem that's eventually going to be solved.
Definitely. It was a pleasure talking with you.
If you ever needed an excuse to drink, this is it. Time for Fan Sanity.
All right, it's time to take calls from you guys, and we got a good one. We sent out the question for you guys to tell us, what is the origination of your Lions fandom, your your origin story. And we got one here. We got a great call from Alex. Let's listen in.
Hey, Crispy Case, what's going on? I wanted to chime in on how I became a Detroit Lions fan. My name is Alex Craig. Give you guys a call from beautiful Chicago. I got kind of a unique story to tell. I was actually born out in Westland, Michigan, a little bit outside of Detroit, a little west of Detroit. My dad's an architect, so everything happened with Detroit. He followed the work and brought us over to Chicago. So I'm from Detroit area, but I grew up in Chicago. So my dad raised me to be, you know, Lions, Tigers, Red Wings, Pistons, all that good stuff. But it's funny, because when I grew up out here in Chicago, all my best buddies are all, you know, Bulls, Blackhawks, Bears. So it's been fun growing up, you know, talking stuff to my friends. And, you know, as much as that Blackhawks-Red Wings rivalry is fun, nothing beats going to Soldier Field to watch it. Stafford beat up on the Bears, you know, in negative 10-degree weather while my beer freezes. Yeah, wanted to chime in. Love your guys' show. Appreciate everything you guys do, and take care.
Did you hear that? He appreciates everything we do, Case.
He does know everything I do.
He appreciates that. That's good. I love that. That's, you know, to see a guy come up in meathead territory with the Bears and turn out a Lions fan. And especially, you know, generationally at that point in time, that's a tough go, right? I talk about it a little bit in the Brandsetter story that I did on the site about living on out of town with a bunch of meathead fans from other teams, and it's hard. It's got to be interesting for you because you're in Minnesota territory, but I mean, is it really that strong of a fan foundation for Minnesota people there, or is it just kind of like Minnesota's like the favorite, but there's other teams and other fans there for other teams?
I mean, well, okay, so technically I live, I think at my current residence, I think I'm about 5 miles from Minnesota. Mm-hmm. We are, the Fargo is the dominant city in the, you know, Fargo-Moorhead sister city type, you know, thing. So
wait,
like,
what was that after Fargo? Is that one of the things that Alex was talking about? Anyway, go ahead, sir.
Moorhead. actually, oh God, there's a horribly racist joke. I'm not going to tell it. Never mind.
Just stick to your bachelor party story. Okay. Hope that bleeding stops.
Well, okay. So note that, like, this is, you know, there's a couple of Native Americans, rowing up the Red River, which is the river that flows right between Fargo and Moorhead. One of them goes, "Fargo." The other one says, "Moorhead." Sorry, everyone. I really apologize that you had to hear that.
You just reminded me of one of the reviews we just got that said your adventure in the car story had no point.
No, it really didn't. I appreciate that review. I have no argument with it at all.
All right. Well, on that bombshell, we'll call it a show. Remember, we're looking for your involvement. Feel free to give Case all the feedback you want.
Please bring it in.
Use the comments in the subreddit and let us know what you think. Also, don't forget about us on Patreon. Patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast. Patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast. Sign up. Help us out. Even $1 a month. Is huge, and it's really not that much to give away. I mean, show some appreciation. We're doing this for you guys, you know? Make sure to check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast. Follow us on Twitter. The Twitter machine is the place to be, at DET Lions Podcast, DET Lions Podcast, because that's where Case is.
Without any pants and somewhat embarrassed about it.
That's right. Give us a call via Skype, Detroit Lions Podcast, all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or call us in the Lions line, 929-33-LIONS, 929-335-4667. Be sure to go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Subscribe to the podcast and get Case and I to come in your little box automatically. Thank you for tuning in, and we're going to see you next time on the Detroit Lions Podcast. It's your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection.
Final seconds winding down, and look at that. How big is that? Chris and Case out of time. Pack the bags, start the plane. This show is over.
Hey, Dean Blandino here, and I can tell you unequivocally that call was 100% wrong.
Yeah, can I get a cocktail? Yeah,